Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. My Olympian mission is to promote lifelong personal development, human empowerment, out-of-the-box thinking, creative self-expression, and a dedication of one's unique talents to community service. All of my labors in this lifetime celebrate the hero's journey in myth, legend, spirituality, popular culture, and in daily life. I firmly believe that the human spirit is essentially heroic and always seeking ways to express its innate nobility and greatness, and that a life fully lived, dedicated to actualizing the highest we can conceive, is the noblest expression of human existence. Today, I'm very proud and pleased to bring you the Amber Dragon Podcast with Linda Marciniak. Greetings and welcome, Linda.
Oh, hail and welcome, Hercules. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I've been working on ancestor work, and it's been surprisingly productive, although at times a bit scary. But I'm enjoying the journey and really, really looking forward to continuing with it until everything feels clear.
Very nice. You know, there's always a lot to learn when we dip into our ancestry and we reach back to really come to terms with our place here as it relates to, you know, that long line of folks that brought us here. And I'm kind of doing that myself right now in the aspect that my mom is, she's kind of winding down a little bit. She had a series of strokes earlier in the year. And so my brothers and I are all kind of taking our turns along with some really good home health aides. And we're kind of keeping her in place. And, I go up one day a week and take care of her, and my brothers, you know, basically do the lion's share because she lives with them. But you're kind of in this really odd place where in her moments of clarity, she can still talk about, you know, her history and her past and kind of in ways that are a little different than, you know, what she was talking about when she was, you know, my mom. And just kind of couching everything she said in the importance of respecting the family. And now she's just kind of, you know, now she's talking from the hip. So you're getting like stories that you never heard before, you know, lots of colorful commentary and that kind of thing. But it really does kind of, you know, and I think when we have the benefit, and I know you went through this with your aunt a couple of years back where, you know, when you have the benefit of doing this kind of work, when you have a little life experience behind you, I think it takes on a whole new depth because I in a lot of ways, you know, when I look at my mom and she'll make these really deep eye contact, she can't see anymore, which is interesting, but she'll look at me in such a way that I know she's connecting with me on a soul level. And, you know, I feel like in a lot of respects, I'm seeing her clearly for the first time, the totality of who she is, not the representative labeled as my mom and the role that she inhabited as my mom, but, you know, the woman that she is, the mother, the daughter, the sister, the wife, the friend, and really just kind of as she comes to terms with her life, it kind of puts my life into a very different perspective, you know. And so when you talk about ancestral work, and obviously we can do that on both sides of the veil, right? So, you know, if you are lucky enough to have living relatives that preceded you on the planet and you can still tap into them in some way, then you certainly have that gift. And if not, then, you know, reaching across the veil and defining those connections that you have with your ancestral tribe as a way of also, you know, reconciling who you are and, you know, and what path you're on, that kind of thing.
Oh, most certainly so. And I know when I started doing the work, a lot of it was what I remembered hearing of the family history growing up. But as I continued with the work and went deeper and deeper, I got to experience a lot of these things. And it explained a lot of the vibe that survived in the family and also a lot of the patterns, you know, that acted themselves out through everybody's behavior. And of course, we have, two parents. And if we live with our birth parents, you get like the different dynamics from both families. Sorting through all that. And, you know, again, you ask yourself the question, as you do with a lot of inner work, is, am I living or am I being lived? And that came up a number of times. And after spending a lifetime trying to deprogram myself, I've come to realize that I really haven't, you know. I've groaned a little, but yeah, all in all, in many important respects, the apple did not fall far from the tree. That's very humbling.
Well, you know what it is. I mean, and I, you know, I'm a therapist, and I've done a lot of individual and family and group work in my life. I've worked with, teenagers in a school setting. I've worked with the criminally insane and the chronically mentally ill, and then I've worked with everybody in between, you know. And it's a funny thing, you know. We talk about it all the time with kids that, you know, that first moment that you realize that at 18, you're your quote unquote, your own person. And, you know, we start counting it down. Boy, when I'm 18, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to, you know, never clean my room again. I'm going to eat cereal out of the box, all this kind of, you know, fantastic that we're going to do when we turn 18, because it's almost like the perception is, you know, you turn 18 and you just, you know, you hand your keys back in and you say, I'm not that person anymore. Now I'm an adult. Now I'm defining, you know, my life. And in reality, it takes us quite a few years to realize that it's all still in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's you have conversations with people and it's those surprise moments where, you know, you heard your mother's voice come out of your mouth to your kids for the first time, you know, or you realize that you're doing something the same way that your father did it, or that you've, you know, defined what, you know, Sunday is going to look like in your house, realizing that it looks like every Sunday you had in your house when you couldn't wait to get out of your house as a teenager. So, you know, it's all still there. I mean, we are a continuation of everyone who has come before us. And at the Dragon, we just had a soul journey ceremony on the full moon, actually, several weeks ago, because Penny, and I'm not sure, I'm sure you're aware of Penny, my sweet neighbor up there by the shop who takes care of me and, you know, feeds me from the abundance of her garden and takes care of the shop, you know, during the week when we're not up there and that kind of thing. And her husband died after a very prolonged illness. It's been a decline over the last 2 years that has really required her to become, you know, a primary caregiver to him and really watch the decline happen. And so we, the Dragons, because she is an honorary dragon, and so we did a soul releasing that we do there at the shop with the fellowship. And I usually, and I've been doing this for years, I call in the circle of my grandmothers. And so whenever, and we do this at Samhain, but whenever we have a loss among us and we do one of these soul-releasing ceremonies, I call in the circle of my grandmothers, Bakshi, Tessie, and Lillian. And I ask that they open the circle and they let whoever in. In this case, it was Jerry. So Bakshi, Tessie, Lillian, open your circle and let Jerry in. As he ends, so we begin. And that's really my philosophy. Well, it's my philosophy on how we roll. You know, we're kind of walking alongside of these individuals until they pass. And in their passing, they pass the baton to us. And so as they end, we begin, we continue them. Our breath, our life extends their DNA. And it's really just such a nice way to look at it. And it allows you to stay connected in that psycho-emotional energetic space really for the rest of your physical lifetime as well, because they're feeding us, you know.
Right.
In the Buddhist tradition, they believe that we actually consume our ancestors, because, you know, when they cremate their dead and they sprinkle the ashes and they grow their vegetables and then they eat the garden, you know, they eat the produce. And so, you know, whether we bury or spread the ashes on the ground, you know, in that Buddhist tradition, you know, our ancestors are literally feeding us. And so in that way, you know, they continue through us as well.
That's a very profound way of looking at it.
Well, I think it's, I think most witches believe in, you know, reincarnation of the soul and the fact that we, you know, we come back through many lifetimes, but there's still a grain in there that the soul doesn't change. So, you know, deep in the center of that soul is the self that you have always been and always will be, and it's just embellished by the layers of each lifetime and the, you know, the one or two jewels that we leave this planet with and, you know, come back with there in our memory banks. And so if you think about it that way, and I know we were talking about your ancestral work that you're doing, but when you think about that, it's really just an opportunity to put another chair around the table. That, you know, we never take a chair away. We just shift and make room either in this plane or the next for that continuation, because that's how we continue, you know. Without them, we don't exist.
No.
And if their death was a snuffing out in some ways, we would be impacted by that too.
In the Greek tradition, the names carry on generationally. So the same names are repeated over and over. And after several, a few generations, you don't really remember who your ancestors were. You know, they had the same names because those names, you know, move through history, but they're called the forgiven. Yeah, and whatever they did, you know, and they're forgiven for it. You know, past the few generations, memory is lost. So, you know, you kind of get a clean slate there.
Well, I think that's a nice, you know, that's a nice thing. You know, I'm, you know, through that a little bit again with my mom, because, you know, she's recalling all of the maybe more fantastic, you know, versions of our life growing up. You know, I mean, it's very important to her right now to, you know, to do a life review that brings her to a good and positive place.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm not necessarily there yet. You know, I haven't reached that point of life review. And so, you know, for my brothers and I, when she's recalling, you know, all of these beautiful family gatherings and all these lovely things, and we're kind of looking at each other like, I don't really remember it going quite that way, you know. Like somebody mm-hmm. was always getting slapped. Somebody was, you know, somebody was crying. Somebody got sent to their room. But in my mom's version of reality right now, those things are just, they've been edited out. And so the choice really becomes mine, you know, whether or not I stand in the principle of my recollection of mm-hmm. that moment in time, or if I appreciate it for the importance that it holds to her right now and what's to be gained. I mean, so I love that Greek tradition of the forgiven, because it really, it speaks to how important we really are to one another and how the mundane stuff really does become irrelevant. You know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, who got a better Christmas present when you were 7 is really not as important as the fact that, you know, you have family around you and there's, you know, there's a tribal ownership there, you know.
Right.
So, and I think that as we live longer, I mean, let's face it, people are living into their hundreds now, like we used to live into our 70s, and now, you know, it's not unheard of to have people at 116 years old still living at home and coming into the hospital for the first time. And so as we continue to age like this, it gives us all an opportunity to kind of maybe outlive all of that mundane stuff, you know, and kind of reposition ourselves and our priorities with one another as we move through this experience. I mean, when you think about, you know, how old you were when your aunt died and all of the good and bad in that relationship for all of the years you knew her.
Yes.
And yet at the end of that thing, what really mattered? You know, what was the most significant piece of the journey for you, and you know, what were you able to do with the rest of it?
Well, it was a very roller coaster journey, and especially toward the end, because she had dementia. So she was lost in dreams, and not all of her dreams were good dreams. So my father, the same thing. He was in a nursing home, and like my aunt, point where he couldn't watch TV because he thought that what was happening on the TV was real. Like
uh-huh.
he was watching a cowboy movie, and he thought they were shooting at him. With my aunt, it was the lawyers in the movie were trying to get her, you know, and things like
that.
As she started going deeper into the dementia, she didn't really recognize people. So I became a whole slew of people from her life. I was old cast of characters in and of myself, you know, from our mutual
history.
So that was very interesting too, that, you know, she recognized me, but she didn't know who I was. So, you know, sometimes I was her brothers, you know, including my father. Sometimes there was an uncle. So, you know, I was all sorts of different people. It really challenged me in that, you know, like, what is our concept of life? How much of what we perceive is actually real? And how much of it is constructed either by our own connecting the dots or by what our family has conditioned us to see and to interpret, and what our society conditions us to see and interpret. And it really put all that into questions. And I started, you know, really looking at my life and trying to judge the reality of my own conclusions. So that was, I think, the most profound thing. And also, you know, toward the end, you know, I began to realize that even though it was difficult, you know, for like a few years, in the context of a lifetime spent with my aunt, you know, she was all in all a phenomenally positive and supportive presence in my life. So, you love people, again, you forgive. And I was able to, you know, get to that, you know, particular point. You know, and I got to know her, how she was probably as a child, in all sorts of different ages as she cycled through, you know, communicating with the people that I was. So, you know, I got a total different, you know, understanding of who she was and what she was all about.
Well, and I think another aspect of that, Hercules, is that, you know, as we come to terms with all this, as we watch this evolving literally before our eyes, and we watch the layers between us and them stripping away, right?
Mm-hmm.
Each layer of generation that goes, you know, my mom's the last one of her generation. So that's very impactful to my brothers and I and my cousins because, well, who's next?
Right.
You know, I mean, once that layer's gone, you know, we're strip mining, right? So once that layer's gone, we're all looking at each other because there is no more, you know, it's not as futuristic as it seemed to be 20 years ago, you know, and 30 years ago. So that concept of forgiving has a lot also to do with the hope that the generation behind us will keep that tradition going.
Yes.
Because, you know, as I reconcile all of my myriad of feelings, you know, about my mom, I'm also reconciling my own experiences with my own kids. And I'm looking at my reactions to my mom right now and how I have the potential to really, you know, I could just debunk her entire fantasy right now. You know, I could be angry about something that happened when I was 9 years old, and I could bring that forward almost 50 years and dump it on my mom's plate and turn it into something that, you know, now has to impact her on a totally different level. Or I can look, you know, with beneficence and with compassion and realize that I'm the next layer.
Yes.
And how are my boys going to respond when my retelling of their childhood strips away all of the negative and just remembers the positive? Are they going to be so forgiving? Are they going to be able to stand in that space with me and say, yeah, Ma, it was pretty great? Or are they going to say, you know, that's not really the way we remember it? So it's kind of this double-edged sword that we play with right now, and it's really a gift. It's just such a powerful gift because it allows us to stand not just in their perspective, but to also have an opportunity, Ebenezer Scrooge, to change the trajectory of our own process. Because if I can't learn these lessons at this point, I'm going to be 58 next month, if I can't learn this lesson at this beautiful opportunity that's being given to me, then I'm basically hopeless. You know, if I continue to move forward with anger and resentment and, you know, bitterness in my heart about things that happened, you know, 40 and 50 years ago, then where am I going to land? you know. And it's so it's kind, you know, it is very interesting. I mean, my, you know, my mom had a very, her best friend growing up. They were maid of honors in each other's weddings. They were godmothers, you know. We called this woman aunt. She wasn't a biological relative, but, you know, she was my aunt. And quite abruptly, after the death of her husband some years ago, she basically just cut off all contact, wouldn't respond to phone calls or, you know, anything like that. And my mom, you know, reached out to her sister and her brother and said, hey, you know, what happened? Did I do something? And they were both saying to my mom, you know, at the time, this is the way she is. She's just like our mother was. You'll never know. She's just, this is, you know, this is it. And so now, you know, a card arrived the other day from this woman, because my brother has reached out to all of the, you know, all of the people in my mom's warm circle to let them know that now would be a good time to reconnect while there's still a chance. You know, and so, lo and behold, here comes this card from my aunt, and I'm like, wow, Ma, you know, look at this. Isn't this great? And here's, you know, my mom sitting there going, Dad, she left me flat, you know. Well, she's 82 now, Ma, and you're like, you know, you're pushing 80 yourself. Maybe it's time we bury the hatchet. I mean, you know, there's got to be a lot of things you could catch up on. And you can see that even though the old hurt was there, she's starting to, like, think about, you know, how do you want to leave? You know, how do you want to leave this place? You know, do you want to leave this place with, you know, your check boxes intact, that you were wronged on this occasion and that one slighted you here and you lost out on that? Or is there something bigger than, you know, than checking all those boxes? And I think when we invest in our ancestral work, we're investing in that possibility that at the end of my tenure here, it could be different for me.
That makes sense. Yeah, oh, that makes a lot of sense. One of the things I did when I was working in hospitals years ago is I was working with people in ICUs, and I was also working with people who were in the emergency room, and in other jobs that I had, I was working with people who were never leaving where they were, in many cases their bed. And it was very difficult, but I got to see you know, very many things that stayed with me for my whole life. One of them was that at the end of life, while you're still lucid, the best thing you could have is good memories. And the worst thing you could have is regrets, because the good memories will sustain you and the regrets will eat away at you. And then the third thing was have somebody who cares enough about you to, like, drop in and see how you're doing, even if it's somebody paid by the hospital or the hospice or, you know, the nursing home where you are. You know, just somebody occasionally dropping by and saying hi and exchanging a few kind words with you. At the end of it all, that's all that matters. So I try to carry that with me into my life and to look at things from that perspective. And you talked about, you know, the nursing grudges, and those are part of the, you know, regrets, I guess, if you had to put them in a category. And I saw my aunt, and I've seen other people who were, you know, old, carrying these grudges, and those things are poison. So
yeah.
I resolved at that point to do my best to try to resolve these things before I wind up in that bed, not going anywhere. So I didn't have to go through that then. And I incorporated a practice. I don't do it every day, but I do it often enough where I review my life as often as possible. And I try to look at things from different perspectives. And then when I see where I might have unintentionally, you know, or ignorantly done a wrong, I try to acknowledge it and in my mind, you know, to ask for forgiveness, and also where I find negative reactions still floating around inside my consciousness, to look at them and, again, just let them go. It's not worth, you know, carrying this around or nursing this. It's just going to poison me and nobody else, and just, you know, trying to let those go as much as possible as well. And I feel that doing that has, you know, eased my my inner self a great deal over time.
Well, and I think it's an interesting practice, and it'll serve you well. I mean, one of the things, you know, the other piece of this is, you know, when we talk about this in terms of the ancestral journey beyond the veil and connecting to our soul tribe, you know, to those kindred spirits that, you know, we stay connected to. And we are not, you know, in our ethereal selves, in our soul, you know, in that spark of life that remains when the mortal coil is shed and burns away. We are not the quote unquote same person that we were in this incarnation. And so, you know, as we depart and cross over the veil, you know, I like to think that, you know, all of this external trappings and all of the residual energetic kind of smog that we've gathered unto ourselves during this lifetime is burned away, and we return back to that pure essence that we are, that seed of divinity, you know, that piece of, you know, our own God form. And it is that piece that continually transcends, and it's that piece that keeps coming back. And but it's very hard to see that when, you know, when that soul is buried deep in the you know, mundane flesh and blood and bone of somebody, you know, in a, you know, carbon-based existence, right? So I'll give you an example. So, you know, I had an uncle, my mother's brother, who I absolutely loathed. I loathed him.
Mm-hmm.
He was a racist. He was a sexist. He was, I think, a little misogynistic. I mean, the man had absolutely no redeeming qualities. He was just rude and offensive, and, you know, he was your typical, you know, Nicky Norker kind of good fella, kind of, you know, rockhead, all right? And the man, I had absolutely no warm, fuzzy feelings for him, and I actually forewent a high school graduation party, because when my mom was planning my high school graduation party and I gave her my list, my uncle was not on it. And she was like, I can't, you know, not invite my brother. And I'm like, well, then you have the party without me. I won't be there. So, you know, it was that kind of a life. I mean, as an adult, I just simply didn't interact with him at all, because I no longer had to. I wasn't a child following rules anymore. So, you know, now we fast forward, and, you know, he died, and I was with my then coven of witches from Bergen County, which is where I was initiated the first time, and we were gathering on Samhain, and before we would go into our, you know, traditional ritual, we would all sit around, and a few of the girls that were psychic would kind of see what, you know, ancestors were floating around close to the veil that wanted to communicate with us. And so I'm sitting in this room, about 18 women, and, you know, people are coming and going, and people are claiming them. Oh, that's my aunt. This was my brother, and what have you. And then one of the girls said, you know, that there was a robber in the room, and you know, nobody's buying, nobody's owning Robert. And then more details came out. He's with a Teresa. You know, still nobody's, you know, bite. And meanwhile, this girl is like laying a bead on me. She is staring at me across the room. She's like, Robert, Teresa. I'm like, I'm looking around. I'm waiting to see who's, you know, going to connect with this guy. And finally she says, there's a really large horse. And somebody asked, you know, what the horse looked like. And she's describing the horse. And I said, my uncle had a horse like that. She says, what was his name? She goes, what was his name? I said, oh, my Uncle Bob. She goes, really, Robert? And she said, well, who's Teresa? And I go, oh, well, my grandmother, his mother was named Tessie. That's her real name was Teresa. And like now all these women are looking at me in the room like, hello. And I said, oh, I loathed that man. He would not be coming through the veil to visit with me on Samhain because I detested him. We had no relationship. And that's when the girl said to me, that's why he's here.
Oh,
he
wow.
wants to apologize and tell you that you were right. Because when they cross over and they reclaim their sovereignty, their dignity, their divinity, they too take stock of, you know, what's transpired in this lifetime and who they've become. And so his revelation was that, you know, I was right and that he was wrong and
wow.
that he was hopeful that, you know, he was hopeful that his next incarnation would kind of redeem him a little bit. And it was a very powerful moment. It was very humbling and, you know, I committed that I was going to visit his grave, which I had not done, before the end of the year, that I would visit his grave. And then I went on about my life as if, you know, I never made that promise. And on New Year's Eve, during the day, my husband and I found ourselves on this wild goose ride trying to find a bakery that still had pizza dough so that he could make his traditional pizzas. And we had to keep driving farther and farther afield because every bakery we stopped at was out of pizza dough. And ironically, we wind up so far afield that we drive past the cemetery that my uncle is in. And, you know, as we drive past it, my husband says, you know, isn't Uncle Bob in the cemetery? And I looked up. I said, we have to go in. I promised him I would visit before the end of the year, and it is New Year's Eve, and I have not done that yet. So it's an interesting journey, but it's also one, you know, when you go back to that Greek concept you were talking about the forgiven, it's really giving them. We're forgiving ourselves.
Right.
We're forgiving, you know, we're forgiving the narrow-mindedness that closes around us as we kind of settle into this mundane existence and we lose track of our own divinity, I think.
Wow. I'm glad that that a lot of what was there was released through his reaching out from beyond the veil.
Yeah, I mean, again, it doesn't replace the experiences that you had,
no.
But it gives you an opportunity to really kind of rethink that one-dimensional definition that we put on each other when we're here. You know, it's like one shot. That first impression that somebody makes is the one that, you know, to their grave, so to speak. But if you start, you know, if you're doing magic, I mean, if you're working in the magical realms and you appreciate that, you know, nobody really ever dies. They just kind of transform back into essence and then, you know, back into flesh. You see that communication as continuing it allows you to continue to connect with them beyond the veil. It allows that relationship, that energetic connection to continue. And it really allows you to keep reconciling not just your relationship to that individual, but your relationship to your tribe, you know, to your soul tribe as well. I feel like I've done all the talking tonight, Hercules, so I'm going to kind of sit back a little bit and
You were saying things that were phenomenally interesting and deep, and that I could definitely resonate with and identify with. And I threw in my two cents every now and then.
Yeah, I think that's barely all I gave you tonight was two cents. But
I always have my conversations. In case anybody's interested, the book that I am working with is called Heal Your Ancestors to Heal Your Life. And it's by Shelley A. Kerr, K-A-E-H-R. And I'm a big fan of Shelley's. I read a bunch of her books. She's the past life lady. And she's been on the show a number of times. And the book is very good. There's an online version for people who don't have time to read, where basically she reads out the exercises, and you can do them as you're listening. It's been phenomenal. I mean, it's basic to me in some ways because I've done a lot of this on my own. But still, she has a unique perspective, and she's thought of things that I haven't thought of and sees things in ways that I haven't seen, just like when you're talking. You know, I'm familiar with a lot of what you're saying, but your perspective and your insights are precious, like diamonds. So I mull them over and try to integrate them into what I'm doing so that I can grow a little bit.
Well, thank you, Hercules. And I think, you know, there's a lot to be said for past life regressions and past life work. But the key, you know, the key in that whole magical system is trust.
Yes.
And establishing a solid foundation of trust with the individual that is going to regress you. And so, you know, don't be afraid if you're interested in kind of exploring that. Don't be afraid to really be interviewing people to make sure that fit is perfect, because in order for that process to work for you, you have to fully surrender to it. And that means you have to fully surrender to the process, including the individual that is regressing you. And if you have any reservations, if there's anything going on that, you know, forces you to feel like your guard has to be up, or your super ego has to be, you know, engaged in monitoring the activities that are going on, then maybe that's not the practitioner for you to go to, because you're not going to be able to fully immerse yourself in the experience and release yourself from your current state,
right,
long enough to get the experience. So, you know, trusting the person who is regressing you, that they have your best interest in mind, that they are using safe techniques, you know, that's all really important. It should be built into how you assess who you choose to do this with. I would really discourage anybody from trying to follow something like that online if you haven't had any experience at all, and, you know, kind of doing it the first time by yourself, or listening online and following it that way. I think it's really... to get the most out of it, I think it's really a relationship that you form with the person who is regressing you, so that they also appreciate and understand the subtle cues of your own distress signals, so that they may be able to kind of work you through a difficult moment without losing the momentum of the opportunity, because they know you well enough to be able to do that. So that's my two cents on that whole piece.
Very, very true. I've been playing with my mind since I was very, very young. And I found in doing this work, and I'm doing it on my own because, again, I live in my subconscious most of the time. I was surprised when I started tapping into some ancestral currents. I got this intense wave of, like, fear shame and rage and all sorts of things. The intensity of it as I unlocked these ancestral memories was very intense, and it took me by surprise. So it showed me how much work I have to do, how much inner work. But again, if I wasn't prepared by a lifetime of experiencing things like that and then dealing with them, I could see somebody getting totally overwhelmed by something like that.
Yeah, we did a really nice kind of ancestral ritual a few years ago. I can't believe we've been doing this at the shop now. It's going to be 6 years in July.
Years, yes.
I can't even believe it's been that long. It's very exciting. But so this had to be quite a few years back. And I did a workshop that, you know, really, I used to call them workshops before I was calling them circles because I wasn't quite acclimated to the environment yet. But so we did this circle, and in it, it was a sequence of swing sets is really what it turned out to be. So at one point, you know, the current you was represented by, you know, a child in a swing, you know, in a public swing, and you're being swung by your mother. But at a certain point, we added layers to the swing. So, you know, equally where you're at, which is you being, you know, pushed on the swing by your mom or a relative, closest female relative to you. And then that person is now also being pushed on the swing. So you're swinging, the person who is pushing you is now being pushed, so she's swinging, and we kind of added layer upon layer, going back and kind of regressing in that way, so that people saw all kinds of things and all kinds of women that were literally pushing them. Some people saw biological relatives because they had, you know, they had the depth in their family tree to go back that far in their current memory. Other people saw just tribal ancestors and themselves in past lives pushing their current self in this life. And it turned out to be a really powerful and really beautiful way to sequence a regression like that. And I'd like to do it again, you know, when we get to the point where we're opening back up to public rituals, that is definitely something that I would like to bring back to the dragon and do again.
Oh, I'm looking forward to things returning back to normal also. And I've been basically fine-tuning the next round of workshops for when you open.
Oh, great.
The pandemic is something in the past.
Well, I mean, I'm so excited because the more people get vaccinated, I know for myself, I feel more confident. And I mean, is there an opportunity that we would still be wearing masks? Yeah, probably. But the dragons, we've been getting together as a fellowship, and celebrating the turnings of the wheel and the Esbats, and you know, we've developed quite a comfort level with one another, knowing that we're all being responsible, but
right.
You know, the more people get vaccinated, and you know they don't have symptoms and they've been vaccinated, the more comfortable I know I'll feel. I am going to be opening back up to the individual healings, because I can do those, you know, masked, and I can do them gloved if I need to, you know, and do it one-to-one in the chapel, and nobody's really going to be, you know, there wouldn't be anybody else up there, just the two of us. So I'm thinking that for next month I'm going to offer my first pentacle healing sessions again on a one-to-one basis, and the readings, that kind of stuff. And
mm-hmm.
I have so many people asking to be, you know, what's going on and wanting to be a part of what's happening, that I'm really excited thinking about, you know, the time in the near future where I'm going to be able to open that back up and do more work in our outer circle at the Dragon, not just our inner circle.
Sounds wonderful. And the Dragon, again, I've been coming there for years. So time passes.
I know, right? I just can't believe it's been that long. But it has.
Yes, indeed it has. And all the things that you're talking about doing and having, they sound absolutely wonderful.
Well, thank you. You know, I think if the pandemic has taught us one thing, it's that faith endures and faith continues to grow and faith continues to reach out and find like-minded people. I mean, I have met so many amazing, magical people since reopening last July. And these are folks that I suspect would probably never have found their way to the Dragon, but because everything was so shut down, we became, you know, pretty prevalent on Google when people were searching for metaphysical shops. And
right.
As a result of, you know, as a result of that, I have really met some just absolutely beautiful people that, you know, now are coming back to the Dragon and enjoying, you know, obviously what we offer downstairs on the retail end, but asking, you know, questions about when we're going to get back to, you know, the business of faith. And I'm really looking forward to doing that myself.
And I'm looking forward to resuming interacting with the community. You know, beyond the Amber Dragon, we've started doing that before the pandemic, and then the pandemic happened. So I have some ideas for that as well. And as the passing of the pandemic becomes more anchored in our reality, I'll be bouncing those ideas off of you. Steve, what do you think about them?
Fantastic.
So
yeah, we have
around 6 minutes left. It's only going to take like a minute or so to share your contact information. We covered a lot of territory, and not just ancestor work, but way beyond ancestor work. What comes to you to share as a parting gift for tonight? Because you've bestowed many blessings and you know, given forth a lot of great material to contemplate. Is there something else that needs to be said tonight?
Yes, yes. Don't be afraid. Don't allow fear to rob you from the opportunity to gain the insight and the abundance that this kind of work is going to feed your soul. I mean, Hercules and I have both talked very openly tonight about, you know, our experiences in this realm and the other realm with, you know, shedding the guilt and shedding the resentment and shedding the hostility. So don't be afraid to take a trip with yourself and your ancestors and learn that dimension, because it's there anyway, and it's right. impacting you anyway.
Anyway.
The idea is to bring it to the forefront, to turn it around in your mind and in your eye and in your hand, and make some very conscious choices about how you move forward in relation to your ancestral journey. You know, how do you honor them and honor yourself and let the rest of it go? And the first thing that you have to do is just put fear aside and allow perfect love and perfect trust to be your guide.
Very, very true and very powerfully said. I learned by doing, before I did the ancestor work, I did a lot of archetypal work, you know, where you identify with the god or the goddess. There, it's not only your individual life and your familiar life and your tribal life, but it's an archetypal reality. And once you find
right.
the pattern that you embody and you express, there's a whole new dimension to explore, because you find yourself in the realm of timeless tales. And you realize
sure.
then that you could either unconsciously allow these stories to enact themselves through you, or you can consciously try to improve the way the stories go and come out with a better outcome maybe. I find that a phenomenally satisfying part of my life. And as I get older, and I'll be 62 next month, I'm finding that I'm letting a lot go, including a lot of the fun places I've explored spiritually over the decades of my life. Because again, I've come home. I know what I love at this point. I seriously doubt looking in exotic places will give me anything more satisfying that, you know, than what I already have. So I'm going to focus on cultivating that spirituality and developing it in greater depth. And I feel totally fine with that. There's nothing missing at this point.
And that's beautiful. We are three-dimensional beings, and that means that, you know, we're kind of anchored in the present, but our roots go deep, and so
yes.
do our celestial, and so do our divine celestial connections. And so don't fear that shadow. You know, don't be afraid to
nope.
turn around and look back. And look at the people, places, and things that have, you know, brought you to this point. Because there's a phenomenal amount of magic that you're going to unleash in yourself when you get to that space. And that's very transformative. And, I mean, it's not without its bumps and bruises, but you're being bumped and bruised now. You know, this allows you opportunity to kind of move through that space and evolve into enlightenment. And I think that's really what we're all doing here.
Yes, and to end the war inside yourself and to embrace yourself in its totality and to feel complete and to be complete.
True.
And that you're fine the way you are.
That's right. So what would it be?
So Mota B, and in closing, how can people find themselves to the world of Linda Marciniak and the Amber Dragon?
Well, you can follow me on Facebook as the Amber Dragon. You can follow me on Instagram also as the Amber Dragon. You can stop by the shop. We are open at number 3 Milk Street in Branchville, New Jersey. We're open on Saturdays from 11 to 4. And you can always check my Facebook page to make sure that nothing's happened that I've had to close. Or you can reach out and email me through oystermoon@msn.com. And I'm really happy to communicate. I connect with a lot of folks through social media that direct message me and insta message me. I'm always happy to answer questions and provide resources and information. If you're on the path or you're just intrigued, please reach out and let's have a conversation.
Thanks again, Linda. Blessed be. And thanks to everybody who joined in tonight, whether you joined us live or you'll be joining us later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And Linda, happy early birthday.
Well, thank you, and happy early birthday to you too, Hercules.
Thank you. Blessed be.